Happy Hour. I'm your host, Tony Yang, and joining me today is Clark Price. Alex Cortez is off doing important things, so we will see him hopefully next week and soon. But Clark,
Tony, I'm very happy to be with you doing unimportant things.
Alex is giving testimony to the legislature, so I think that's a little bit more important than what we're doing. But I think we're doing some other important good by being here and discussing the issues of the day. And I think the issue of the day still, I think the past couple of weeks, has been the January 6th hearings in front of Congress. They've been sporadic a little bit, and not in a bad way. But your thoughts on how the primetime hearings have been going so far?
For many days, the issue of the day has been a day, January 6, 2021, because it is a day in which the Republican Party emerged as overtly opposed and violently opposed to democracy and to truth and to the future of the United States. That's why this is important, because we live in a country that did something very unusual in human history. It sustained a vital and active, a meaningful democracy for over 200 years. And democracies are very fragile. And what January 6th showed was that an absolute buffoon could make something up, and he could create this confusion in the minds of the already befuddled Republican base, by which he attempted to steal an election on the pretext of opposing theft of an election. So that may seem very clever, but it is standard operating procedure for a world-class con artist, and that's what Donald Trump is. I don't think he's a world-class con artist because he's smarter than other con artists, better than other con artists. It's because being born into wealth and in New York, he was able to adopt a believable pose that he was an important, wealthy, significant person. And there is a mythology in this country that would support a con artist using these techniques. And that is, if you are wealthy, you are better than people who are not wealthy. And you are possibly blessed by God, because there's a thing that we have called a prosperity gospel, which has that premise to it. So I think he, by dint of fate, has been positioned to be the con artist that he is, and to threaten American democracy because it's fragile, which is the premise of what I'm saying. And you have a person who is willing to take advantage of its fragility, and with utter and complete indifference to the greatness of this country, the beacon of promise that it holds to the world, and to the many, its wonderful legacy and history, not all good, but striving towards a more perfect union and arcing that, the arc of justice forward. And to all of the future generations that might benefit from it. That's why this discussion, not just by us, but by this nation, is so critically important. It is an existential discussion. And I don't mean existential in democracy. I mean existential in terms of life and death discussion. Because if we lose our democracy, a lot of people are going to die as a consequence of all the cascading things that will happen as a result of that loss. It's a very serious discussion.
And part of the discussion that I'm really concerned about was, in this instance, it failed. And it only failed because there were people that were willing to stop it, right? Like individuals like Brett Raffensperger, Secretary of State Raffensperger, who's a Republican, who voted for Donald Trump, but adhered to the vote count and what was clearly the will of the people established by Georgia. Trump, in the intervening years, has gone on a campaign to destroy any resistance, to vilify people, to attack people, to try and get at them further disengaged from the process, to obliterate any resistance, to really get people to fold and to position people as secretaries of state, as county polling instructors, as county registrars, to really perpetuate not only the big lie, but an even more sinister view that unless Republicans win, the vote is rigged. And I think that's really dangerous, right, Clark?
What I completely agree. And also I note that the implantation of people in key positions is the realization of what Joseph McCarthy propagated as a paranoid vision of what communists were doing to America. And so what you have in reality is that the Republican Party is putting people in to key positions who are opposed to American democracy. I don't think there is anything more un-American than the Republican Party active in the United States right now. And the foundation of it is, as reporters on Fox News have been noting, who have been astounded by the January 6th hearings to the degree that they are exclaiming on the, I couldn't believe that there was so little foundation to Trump's assertions, that there is actually not a scintilla, no evidence whatsoever. So this is the real, we have to stand back in some amazement here and look at what the con artist has spun up in the minds. But he turned this into a reality, not in his mind, not in the minds of anyone around him who knows, but in the minds of his, I'm sorry, rube followers who decided to act out violently based on nothing other than Trump told them. And Trump based what he said on absolutely nothing. Now, you're hearing me say that, and you're thinking some people, not you, but some people might be hearing those words come out of me and say, ah, he's there. It can't be. We can't have this whole thing that is, you know, consumed. The nation is all over Fox News, and it can't be. There's a ton of smoke here. There's got to be some fire. No, there is no fire. There is nothing at all. He made it up. And how did he do this so convincingly? How did the con? There's no better con artist than someone who becomes the president of the United States because there is an equity of authority that we convey to that person. Anyone who is elected president of the United States is invested without doing anything else other than being elected with the prestige and the history and the grandeur of the office and the power of the office, the sweeping power often described as the most powerful person in the world. And that person often loses this influence and this prestige and this standing, which is unparalleled. In a manner to cajole and convince people because, and it's called, they're using the bully pulpit. But in this case, Donald Trump is a genuine bully. and he's using it to bully rather than to lead and to inform the American people so that they can understand why he's doing what he's doing in an intelligent way. No, he embraces deception. He lies freely. It's been documented that no president, no public figure has told more lies than Donald Trump. And he is obviously the worst president of all time, but also I would say one of the worst human beings who has ever lived. And this is the man who threatens our future, because without democracy, our future is highly questionable and is certainly driven into much less than it that could or should have been. Democracy is key to us functioning well as a nation. Otherwise, you've got Vladimir Putin, who I wouldn't be surprised, and this is pure speculation, but it sure sounds like somebody gave Donald Trump this idea. Who was it?
Well, I'm pretty sure it was Vladimir Putin that gave him the idea.
It's absolutely something he would do.
Yeah, because I think subversion of democracy is exactly what Putin did.
The reason that Putin supported Donald Trump was to take down the United States. He's no friend of the United States. It was like, they'll sure be better off with Donald Trump in place. No, it was to harm this country and harm its people, to diminish the United States so as to bring up him and bring up Russia.
Right.
And who are they? What is Vladimir Putin? And what is Russia?
Yeah.
It is a disgrace to humanity. And it is a nation that is being run by a single individual for the purpose of conquest and enrichment of himself. It is a kleptocracy. And I will tell you that Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump are two birds of a feather. Right. They are the same.
Right. And you know, the hearings are, I think, revelatory about how deep this conspiracy ran. I thought, I mean, we have the product of fake electors being run by the Trump campaign this was all part of a strategy to legitimize the grievance of that. Right. I mean, the fake electors from Michigan and Wisconsin, the intimidation we heard again this week about the voice calls to Brad Raffensperger in Georgia. I think it's all an active effort and very serious plans. I mean, even to the plans of using secret private contractors to try and intercept ballots and to capture Dominion voting machines, you know, to try and subvert democracy.
Dominion is suing Fox News and others, including that Sydney, what's her name?
Powell, Sydney Powell.
Yeah, so I'm, and they're suing for billions, and Fox just tried to have it dismissed, and the judge said, no, they got a case. So, yeah, it's the depth of this was planned over time. It was planned by lawyers. It was like, there's a thing that mafia bosses and mafia families always have lawyers, the concierge. And that's what it was like a bunch of mafia lawyers got together and developed, how can we make a bunch of criminal behavior, how can we make a putsch, which is a violent overthrow of a government? That's what this was, an attempted putsch. How can we make this seem legitimate? How can we put a patina of? And so the planning was done with the intention that it would be justifiable later in some way. So it was like the Biden's electors were fraudulent So we had to create legitimate electors, and they would be Trump's electors. And so that's what Eastman, John Eastman, came up with. That whole thing of how to do that. That was that guy. By the way, I'm hoping that all of these attorneys, certainly Rudy Giuliani, who used to be thought of as a legitimate law enforcement person, but all of them need to be disbarred and prosecuted. And then let me state before I forget, which I wouldn't anyway, that Merrick Garland, our attorney general, is the worst attorney general in American history, because the need for him to stand up and defend democracy with the rule of law is so great, and the fear on his face, which makes a deer in the headlights look heroic and courageous, is palpable. And so he's a disaster. And another aspect of the planning and everything, that and the execution of this coup or putsch, this violent overthrow of a government, is that it almost worked. And I could go through the things that he could have changed in order to succeed, but I don't have to. They've studied it. And this was a rehearsal. The next one, they're going to know how to do it. They put people in place, but not enough of them. What they really, really needed was not this fig leaf of law that was so obviously, transparently worthless. They needed the military. They didn't have the military. So that's going to change next time. The military will support this stuff. But, the problem is that people that support this kind of behavior, people that have been led down this path of democracy is no good, we need to have a strong, what, under the Bush administration, and by the way, for me, George W. Bush was a clear predecessor for the metastasized version of what the Republican Party became under W after 9/11. And that is a heinous, a torturing regime that also was talking about this idea of the unitary executive, which is a fascist idea, and was advanced by Carl Schmitt, the Nazi lawyer, under Hitler, the unitary executive. And the idea came down into the Trump administration, and Trump embraced it fully. But the neocons, this is the Republican Party, is not a genuine American party. They are not, they have metastasized into something that does not believe in the foundations of this country. And they like to talk about American exceptionalism, and they put it in some divine context. If there is American exceptionalism, it's because of our Constitution. It's because of our system of democracy and rule of law. That's why we are exceptional.
I think what you just said had a little bit of reminded me of one thing.
Yes.
Which was, we have to keep in mind, Hitler failed in the original beer hall putsch in 1923. Right, putsch. And
Pooch.
Is it pooch or push? I think it depends on how my German is. But he failed in 1923, but he learned a lot in the failure to do it. Despite the fact that he was actually sent to prison.
That's precisely what I'm saying.
Yeah.
That's precisely what I'm saying. Yes. No, they'll know what to do. I mean, I looked at it from the outside, and I could see what they got wrong, and I could see what changes to make. Anyone in a strategic position can do this. What he needed to get to the point, I hate to even put this out there, but he needed to create a justification for martial law. And he was pretty close to having it. Pretty close. So, and the imposition of martial law, in order to do that, he probably had the foundation. The holdup had to be the military. They weren't going to do it. And it was probably Milley.
I think we owe a lot to General Milley, because it was General Milley that probably put a stop to that, number one. And I think number two, at least from some, and this is just pure speculation on my part, but they really thought, or at least thought that when they had the protest, they were going to get Antifa or they're going to get some counter-protesters to justify the violence, you know, i.e. Charlottesville. And when that did not happen, the jig was up. It was clearly, you know, there weren't any pro-Biden people out there protesting in the streets on January 6th opposing Trump. They were just all his supporters. They were just those people.
Although Trump spokespeople have more than mildly suggested that they were Antifa.
Right, right.
They have overtly said that. But Trump's now talking about pardoning him. Would he pardon Antifa? No.
And I think that's the sort of dangerous sort of thing, because it's now played out not just as an isolated event, right? It's played into this is now the active policy position of the Republican Party. Just take, for example, the state of Texas. The GOP has endorsed the fact that Joe Biden is not the legitimate president of the United States. How dangerous is that now that we have a political party that's doing that?
I really want to keep emphasizing that the Republican Party is an American party only in the sense that they are in America. They do not subscribe to American values. They do subscribe to superficially talking about the Bible and the American flag, so they will wave about the festooned superficialities of American iconography. But in reality, they have done more damage to this country than any foreign power. And as I said, I find their tactics to be very similar to what the ultra-right in this country used to ascribe to communism. And that I now believe that what was happening was projection, was Freudian projection, that McCarthy and other people of the right during the era of the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s were projecting onto others what they themselves aspired to do, and now has become an actual reality practiced in this country at the highest levels. I consider these people to be traitors to America, because if you do not support democracy and support the rule of law, and you contrive all of these fictions in order to justify tearing it down, you are a traitor to the United States, and you need to be identified as such.
Right, and they're still attacking democratic institutions. I don't mean the Democratic Party, meaning in terms of elections, right? That's the cornerstone. Clear, transparent, fair elections are the hallmark of any democracy, and that is constantly being eroded right? That, and when you question the outcome and the legitimacy of elections, that's how you become, you know, and forgive the term, a banana republic.
Well, fascists are like, these people are fascists in that they will say anything to advance their own interests. It's always party and the leader over the country, even over their own interests. But this has gone very, very far. It's to the point now where they do not believe the only election for them that is legitimate is one in which they win.
Right.
So that's another definition of fascism. Another aspect of it.
Right. Well, I mean, I think they're slowly, well, I don't think they're slowly, I think they're becoming the party of fascists. There's nothing on the political plank that speaks of anything, and I'm here speaking about the Republican Party.
I mean, the fascism is about the elevation of this unitary executive, as it was described, during the rise of Hitler, and also, as the neocons were talking about it, during the George W. Bush administration. And, so it's completely about this individual defining what is, electable. So that's the only thing that person's win is the only legitimate win.
Right.
I am the state. And the state, and I control all state power, and that is everything. So that's, this is all very, ugly stuff that has come to this, been possible without Fox News also. I think Fox News has been pumping mainlining poison into the American body politic for a couple of decades at least now, and it has an effect, and the effect is this, it's destroying this country. And now you have Lachlan Murdoch in charge of Fox News, who makes Rupert look kind of like a moderate.
I know. That's what's scary.
It's all scary. And I have a friend that is very religious. He recognizes everything that we're talking about, but he says that we need to pray and put our faith in the Lord to save us from this. I think, to me, that's just very lazy, because if I'm going to pray, God will take care of we'll do the work. We have to do the work. We have to get involved and do this and fight to retain what we have. We can't take it for granted anymore. It's not just going to go on by itself. We have to fight.
Well, and that's the interesting thing. And speaking of fighting, The Atlantic came out with an article about, I want to say 2 weeks ago, about the potential for Gavin Newsom to make a 2024 run if Joe Biden falters or decides not to run.
Oh, jeez.
You know, but the article kind of made the point of, like, Gavin's willing to fight. He will fight dirty. And maybe that's what we need.
Okay. I'm sorry. I think that Gavin Newsom is something of a show pony. And you know who his former girlfriend is?
Well, yeah, Kimberly Guilfoyle.
Kimberly Guilfoyle, who is Donald Trump Jr.'s girlfriend, and who was dancing and having a wonderful time as the insurrectionists invaded the Capitol and defecated and urinated on the history of democracy in America, on the citadel of American democracy. And so I think that Gavin Newsom's judgment is putrid. And I do not want Gavin Newsom to run for the presidency because he's a recovering alcoholic. We don't really need that. There are people who can lead and can do it well and can be competitive who are not recovering alcoholics. I wish them the best. That's fine. But and George W. Bush was a recovering alcoholic. I'd rather have someone who doesn't have to recover from alcoholism. I want them to focus on the restoring the vision of the United States and restoring American democracy. I don't want to know anything about their ego and vanity. And if you've ever seen Gavin Newsom speak, you're seeing a man who is very pleased with himself.
I'm willing to agree with you on that when you see him publicly speaking.
Yeah, well, there's got to be somebody else. And I don't, you know, I think it's great that he is progressive, but and I just, as a person, I've not really been thrilled by him. And so I'm not going to encourage him to run for the presidency.
I think, but the issue does speak to some political headwinds, I think, ahead of both the midterms and of 2024 for Joe Biden. The economy is in not great shape, mostly due to inflation, though the job numbers still look very good. I mean, if you take a look at the job and employment numbers, I mean, this is very, very good if you're looking for work at the
right
moment.
Here. All right.
Yeah, you know. And so the question I think is, I don't think Biden's support is as soft as I think it is. Inflation is hurting people, but I don't think he's Jimmy Carter. You know, I also don't think he has as many, options as maybe Carter and even Reagan had at taming inflation and the sort of issues within the global economy, but there is some political headwinds, and there are sort of real issues that I think President Biden is facing. But a lot of that is also being driven by this contestation of democracy that's going on. And again, I think my concern and yours, Clark, is what is Biden going to do, right? Democracy is under assault. We need to do something.
Biden is a serious problem. And I think there's a number of good things. I've been surprised that he's been as good as he has been because I thought he was pretty awful and running for office. I didn't think he was good. He has failed to fire our attorney general and place it by somebody who gives a damn and doesn't look terrified. So I think he's very conventional in a time which demands an elastic, that is to say, a person who can deal with the unconventional aspects with which he's faced. Also, I'd say that Biden could not be more flat-footed in the face of Donald Trump, who is an accomplished huckster and showbiz, you know, showbiz performer.
Right.
I mean, Donald Trump is mostly an illusion. And I'm going to say by mostly, I mean 98%. Biden is a real guy who you can relate to as a real guy, but he's pretty bloodless. His passion consists of Come on, man.
Well, I mean, that's a lot of people, though. That's a lot of people. Maybe you don't expect that from the president.
I know, but these are exceptional times, and I want an exceptional person to step up and explain to the American people what they would lose. I mean, so often I hear that he's a threat to our democracy. To take it another step, what does that mean? I want someone to explain what the consequences of losing democracy would be. They would be fatal. That's what they would be. And so I need somebody that is a better presenter and thinks more quickly. I'm not an ageist, but I do think that somebody who would be younger than Biden. I see Biden trying to show us that he's not as old as he seems. He'll slip going up the stairs and trying to be youthful, or he's out riding a bike on a holiday and then he falls off the bike.
Look, I'm going to defend that a little bit, okay? I'm 38 years old. I've fractured my ankle on my bike.
No, I'm talking about the right. Of course, I mean, if Donald Trump were to go out riding a bike, you wouldn't be able to see the bike.
Yeah. Because
his corpulence would have subsumed it entirely with the folds of putrid flesh.
Yeah, if I were Joe Biden, I'd challenge Trump to a bike riding contest. Okay, we know who'd win that one.
Well, I mean, the political contests are already superficial enough without doing that. But there are subtleties and cues that are sent to the public that I wish we had somebody, and I don't know who I would advocate for, but I mean, you're talking about Gavin Newsom, and obviously people are thinking about him. Before the show, we were talking about our mutual favorite, which is Al Franken.
Right.
And Al Franken, I think, was identified by the Republican Party as a potential presidential candidate. And for obvious reasons, he has the showbiz aptitude of Donald Trump. He has it. I'll tell you what the thing about, obviously, Al Franken is funny, and that humor is power.
Right.
But also, he has he's a good-hearted person. And you can just tell.
Right.
From what he says and how he says it. Tell. Seeing him and his family, he's a good-hearted person. That's not who Donald Trump is. Donald Trump is a black-hearted person, completely indifferent to human suffering, indifferent to anything that is human.
Yeah, no, I think I think it's going to be interesting. For me, I'm just waiting to kind of see what Franken will do. I don't think it's all of the realm out of possibility that if 2024 comes around and Biden sort of decides to exit the scene, I don't think there will be there might be a movement. I certainly would be among them to have Franken run.
I don't think Biden is viable for another term.
It certainly is not feeling that way, at this moment. I mean, again, we don't know what the election dynamics will be. It may be very well the new poll came out today. The USA Today poll has Ron DeSantis ahead of Donald Trump at 39% versus 37% in New Hampshire. So that will be interesting. You have two Florida men running against each other.
Well, I'll tell you what that's going to do. Donald Trump is going to go after DeSantis, which is just fine. I think that's perfectly fine. I think what that means is that Donald Trump will use his preeminent position in the Republican Party to take down Ron DeSantis, because he doesn't care about what's good for the party And it's time for me to step aside and let Ron DeSantis, who's a true torch carrier for the party, now you have to understand that party, and you can tell by the fact that there is no platform for the Republican Party other than Donald Trump. There is no written platform. This is unheard of. It is all about Donald Trump. Unless you're in Texas. They did write their platform position out in Texas. And it's one of the most psychotic documents you could ever imagine. So this is a party that's going to places. And I would say that the candidates for DeSantis or Donald Trump as potential candidates, not for the White House.
So I want to read part of the proposed convention platform that the Texas GOP adopted, including the fact that Joe Biden is an illegitimate president. They also want to add to the proposed platform that Texas retains the right to secede from the United States, and the Texas legislature should be called upon to pass a referendum consistent thereto. It wants the secession referendum in the 2023 general election of the people of Texas to determine whether or not the state of Texas should assert its status as an independent nation. Now, is it just me, or wasn't that question settled in 1865?
Well, yes.
But the absurdity of this.
What wasn't settled was the fact that Texas has become a roiling, fetid swamp of right-wing extremism. That's kind of stuff that until Donald Trump mainstreamed it would have just been, you know, the natterings of a freak show. And so now it's like, and I think that one of the things that's promoted this kind of behavior and these kinds of attitudes and comments is the competition among right-wing media outlets to be and candidates to say something more outrageous than the other. So they'll make up. I mean, Fox News stock and trade is like Mr. Potato Head's been degendered or something nonsense, and Dr. Seuss and Merry Christmas, and I mean all of the stuff that they talk about that they just somebody sitting around making this stuff up, and so you do that all the time, and you just keep going down, down, down to the bottom of the barrel, and then you find that there is no bottom. It just keeps going. And that's what the Republican Party is now. I mean, they lack common sense. They believe in delusion. They put up a leader who is probably psychopathic. And so what do we have? We have a situation where this country is facing a disaster because one of the parties is no longer functioning as an American party. And they have done more damage to this country than any enemy. And that Russia and Vladimir Putin support the Republican Party is for a very clear reason, that party is destroying this country. He doesn't support Donald Trump. He doesn't support Republicans. He doesn't push racism because it's good for the country. It's a way of fighting a war to harm this country without firing a shot.
Well, we don't need an enemy firing shots. We have plenty of Americans that are willing to shoot each other right now.
This is what the Republican Party has got for us.
Yeah, and I think it's actually absolutely terrible. It has given us nothing but sadness, malent, malfeasance, and it will lead this country down a road following a false god, I think. That much is certain in my mind, because I think no one, and which is kind of really funny, if you read into the Texas GOP platform, it is so Christian nationalist, right? It hates all the right people, gays, illegal immigrants, whatnot, women. It just hates all the right people. And you're just saying that's exactly what will undo democracy and undo capitalism and all the good things that this country stands for. And for what? A kleptocracy that is nominally Christian. Because that is essentially what Russia is. They want to be Russia.
Well, that's what it would turn out to be in practice. But I mean, it's just the Texas Republican Party is just a madhouse. And but actually, isn't the entire the National Democratic Party? I mean, the National Republican Party, I mean to say,
yeah.
they were involved in officially involved in advancing this the fake electors scheme. That's the National Party involved in that, not just the Trumpers.
Yeah,
I mean it's you throw up your hands and go, what can you do? Well, we've got to do something. I mean, we have to continue to fight for the tenets of this country and fight for the democracy be sustained.
Right. And that's the one thing I think moving forward, I think the commitment of our program is to keep discussing these issues. I think it's really important that our listeners think and discuss these issues.
There's probably a lot of them who are hearing us who don't agree with what we've said. Well, prove us wrong. And you have to actually do it. You have to actually have facts, not things that Donald Trump says. There is no evidence whatsoever to support Donald Trump's voter claims. None. It's not that there must be some. No, there is not any.
But, so, and I would push it further. I would say, our concern is not about the dialogue of the issues. Our concern is the survival of democracy, right? Where voting matters and we respect the rule of law. I think those things are much more fundamental than sort of some of the policy debates that I think we engage with.
Yeah, well, we have a lot of challenges ahead because the MAGA freak show is not over, and it's going to go on for years, and it may have permanently infected our body politic.
Yeah. So we're down to a few minutes left on our program, and it's tradition that we end with our one good thing. My one good thing this week was actually two things. They're related. One is Juneteenth. That is the day in 1865 when slaves in Galveston, Texas, were informed of their freedom by Union soldiers that liberated them. And I think there's a long historical arc to what we saw this week in the January 6th hearings, where testimony from two African-American women who were volunteers who voted to who worked to count the voter rolls in Georgia were viciously attacked. And as Ryan J. Riley, a correspondent for MSNBC, wrote, the testimony from Moss and Freeman is a reminder that Trump sought to invalidate votes in black communities and then made villains out of black women who were there to help their neighbors vote. And that is the importance of voting and why we need to reinforce and save democracy, to keep the forces that want to silence viewpoints that particularly these Christian nationalists, these fascists, want to oppose and keep silent, to make sure we give them voice and to engage with them. So that's my one good thing. I think we still have an opportunity to do that.
By the way, there's nothing Christian about Christian nationalists.
No, no.
And there's nothing in the national interest from Christian nationalists. So my one good thing is the January 6th hearings. I often will cite some film that I've seen or music that I've heard or something, but I actually have to say that there is no drama higher. There is nothing I've seen that more riveting than every single one of these January 6th hearings. They are, this is exactly what I would like to see government do. And this is precisely what our government, with its and by the way, I'm noting most of the people who are testifying are Republican. So I think it's extremely powerful, and it comes off as sort of a reassertion that bipartisanship, that is the idea of the loyal opposition. That is, we're all loyal to the United States. We're all loyal to the tenets of America, but we do oppose each other in how we interpret our patriotism and how we interpret our participation with democracy. Yeah. We don't oppose the foundations of democracy. We don't oppose democracy. And so that's what these hearings show, that Republicans and Democrats can work together to save this country. So I take that to heart. And also, I love the legal reasoning. I love the intellectual process of good governance. I love that it's logical, factual, and presented with a compelling argumentative coherence. So that's my one good thing.
All right. Well, with that, we are all out of time. I want to thank you for listening. For Clark Price, myself, and an absent Alex Cortez, I want to thank you for listening. Tune in next time for more of the Happy Hour. Thanks, and goodbye, everyone.
Bye-bye.